This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. It is Tuesday, and we are going to start today with Ask the Doctors. Here in Boston, more than 1,000 city employees could face suspension this week for violating the city's COVID-19 vaccine mandate. Acting Boston Mayor Kim Janey announced the mandate back in August.
We have to do all we can to protect ourselves, our families, and the residents we serve.
Employees are required to provide proof of vaccination or receive a negative COVID test every week. The mandate has gone into effect in waves starting last month. And last week, the Janey administration started notifying employees who were out of compliance of the potential consequences beginning today. Meanwhile, hospitals across the state are preparing to fire potentially hundreds of healthcare workers for not complying with their vaccine mandates. And because there's always more, there are new developments in a potential pill for treating COVID, booster shots from Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, vaccine side effects, and more. Are you still with us? Well, if you have questions, now's the time. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK, or you can tweet us at Radio Boston. And here to help answer those questions, Dr. Sabrina Asumu, Assistant Professor of Medicine at Boston University School of Medicine and Infectious Disease Specialist at Boston Medical Center, as well as Dr. Helen Boucher, Infectious Disease Physician at Tufts Medical Center and Interim Dean of the Tufts University School of Medicine. Dr. Asumu, welcome back.
Thank you for having me on.
Dr. Boucher, welcome back to you as well.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Tiziana.
So, Dr. Boucher, I'll stay with you for a second. We mentioned the city of Boston's vaccine deadline. You heard me talk about that, proof of vaccination or a negative test every week. Boston officials say about 1,200 workers weren't in compliance as of this weekend. Now, that's out of 18,000 people. So the question is that a win? Only 1,200 out of 18,000? Or is anything short of 100% compliance not enough?
Well, you know, it's a very good question. And I think that, it's on the way to being a win. And we have good evidence now that these mandates actually are very effective in getting people to become vaccinated. So my hope is that that last 1,200 will find their way to yes and get on board with being vaccinated so that they can maintain their important jobs for the city.
Dr. Asumu, the most effective route to getting people who are not yet vaccinated at this point, is it communication? Is it consequences like Boston's preparing for? Is it outreach from close family and friends? You know, you hate to see people lose their jobs and you hate to see critical labor forces be short-staffed right now. Can we move the needle with folks who have yet to be vaccinated? Who could be and have yet to be vaccinated?
Yeah, I think that we need to use all the different tools that we have in our toolbox. I think as Dr. Boucher just said, we've seen that mandates actually work. And if you look at the history and what has actually worked in the past for increasing the rates of vaccination, mandates absolutely work. But the other thing we need to consider is that, you know, during this pandemic, there's been so much misinformation. And so that is why it is so critical for us as healthcare professionals to continue to answer questions and reach to those who have not yet been vaccinated and answer their questions, because people still have questions.
So we actually have a caller calling in with a question about unvaccinated family members. So 1-800-423-8255. This is Ask the Doctors. Now is the time to call with your coronavirus question. We've got Kathy on the line in Cambridge. Kathy, go right ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My mom is 96 years old. She is fully vaccinated and she just got her booster, her Pfizer booster. She is moving in with my sister and my sister's husband, who are both strong anti-vaxxers, and I want to know if she will be safe. We've had tremendous family battles about this, and I'm trying to get an expert opinion.
Kathy, that is a tough situation. Dr. Boucher, obviously you don't know the specific full details of Kathy's mother's medical situation, but what can you tell Kathy?
Yeah, so Kathy, I certainly empathize with you. I think we all have family members who struggle with this, and you know, I would say that it's very good that your mom is fully vaccinated and has had her third dose, but also have to say that she remains at higher risk because of her age. And unfortunately, we know that older folks are at the highest risk of having complications if they do get COVID. So, you know, it's definitely worth continuing to talk to your sister and her husband about the importance of getting vaccinated, if not for themselves, for your mom. And by all means, using appropriate mitigation measures unless and until they are fully vaccinated.
So Drs. Boucher and Asumu, while we still have Kathy, I'm going to ask a follow-up question. You may or may not be able to answer this, but do we know data about the rate of breakthrough cases in older adults in the age bracket that Kathy's mother is? Dr. Asumu, do you know?
So, you know, when you look at breakthrough cases and who are the people who are having breakthrough cases, number one, age is an important factor. A second factor is having an underlying condition. It is hard for me to talk about the specific case, but right. We do know that when we do have breakthrough cases, they're often less than 1%. I mean, we always think about and worry about them, but, you know, we see more breakthrough cases the more people we have vaccinated, but we always need to remember the denominator and that, you know, from what we look at, it's often less than 1%.
I just want to clarify also, when we say we see more breakthrough cases, the more people get vaccinated, that's not causality, as you're saying, Dr. Asumu. What that is the overall cases may go down, but as more and more people are vaccinated, the people that you do see who have COVID are going to be disproportionately vaccinated because that's who everyone is, right?
Yes. No, thank you for clarifying. What I didn't mean causality. It's more like, you know, the more people you have vaccinated, then the more likely you have, if you pick a random person, that person is more likely to be vaccinated. So the pool is greater of people who are vaccinated and who are at risk. But yes, vaccinating is the way to go.
Thank you, Dr. Asumu. So Dr. Boucher, we'll pick up the next call for you again. Then we've got Mike on the line in Everett. Mike, go ahead.
So I have a question about why there isn't more of a mandate for people that are vaccinated to also be tested. It seems to me, I'm not a medical person, but just going through the logic, the people that get sick that aren't vaccinated are much more likely to notice it because they're less likely to be asymptomatic. And the people that, you know, who've been vaccinated are not going to notice. And even if they get the sniffles, they're like, I'm vaccinated. Why should, you know, I can't have it?
So, Mike, I'm going to take it from you there. Thank you. And Dr. Boucher, so I'm going to break out two pieces there. First, Mike asserted that you're more likely to be symptomatic if you're not vaccinated and have COVID-19, and you're more likely to be asymptomatic if you have been vaccinated. Just checking that with you, because we're laying that as an assumption. And then I do know the Biden administration is preparing to invest in making more take-home and at-home tests available. Do we need a more aggressive testing regime, even for those who are vaccinated? Dr. Boucher.
Yeah, so two important issues. I think first and foremost, I don't believe it is true that unvaccinated individuals more likely are symptomatic. They're more likely infected, for sure. And they're more likely to get serious illness and have bad complications. That's true. But both vaccinated and unvaccinated individuals have asymptomatic disease with COVID. Then the testing issue is a really good one. And tests are another important tool in the toolbox of getting us out of this mess with COVID. And so I am very, very gratified that the Biden administration is investing in these tests. And, you know, we've already seen their utility in our schools here in Massachusetts, where we have the test and stay, where our kids who are back at school, like my high school daughter, who's fully vaccinated, has been able to get a rapid test when she had a cold that was negative and stay at school. So the rapid tests are going to help us in order to get back to a normal life more quickly. And they definitely have a place in the armamentarium here.
And Dr. Asumu, I'm going to read you a little bit of reporting because we had this question from Mike on testing. I'm going to read you a little bit of reporting from WBUR's Deb Becker today. In response to staffing issues facing Massachusetts schools and prisons, Governor Charlie Baker is activating hundreds of National Guard members to assist staffers. The governor's office said Tuesday that 200 National Guard members will be deployed to help with COVID-19 testing in public schools. They're going to begin training this week, start assisting with tests on Monday. How important is that additional staffing? You know, when we see the National Guard mobilized, that also really communicates something about urgency. I just want to give you a chance to react to all that.
Yeah, no, although we've made progress, we're still in a pandemic. And I'm glad that we're actually using all the resources to make sure that testing is carried out and that we mobilize all the resources that we have. Because, you know, we keep, so number one, you know, vaccination. That's what we need to be doing. But testing is also a very important piece because we want to be able to identify those who are infected so that we can use mitigation measures. And masking is also important. So I think that we need to remember, although we're making progress, we're still in a pandemic and we need to use all the different tools that we have in our toolbox.
1-800-423-8255. This is Radio Boston. We are talking with Drs. Sabrina Asumu and Helen Boucher. To ask your coronavirus questions, that's the number, 1-800-423-TALK. We've got Mary on the line in Brookline. Mary, go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I was just wondering, have they been able to tell if the breakthrough cases have been primarily from Pfizer or Moderna or JJ or all about the same?
Dr. Asumu, why don't I stay with you on that one? What do we know?
Yeah, no, this is a very important question. So the CDC stopped systematically sort of getting information on all breakthrough cases. They're focusing on the cases that require hospitalization. So that's where we actually have the best data. There seems to be, if you look at different states, some states seem to be reporting that there were more, so these are more like anecdotal and smaller sort of in different states. There seem to be more breakthrough cases with the J&J, but this is why we're eagerly awaiting the decision that's going to hopefully come this week in terms of the FDA decision about booster shots for J&J. So we really need that information. The mRNA seemed to have similar performance in terms of efficacy and performance so far from the data that I've seen. I don't know if Dr. Boucher has some additional data that she'd like to share.
Dr. Boucher.
Yeah, no, I would agree. And I think we do have to be very careful as we look at these data because every report is somewhat different. And I, like Dr. Asumu, am really looking forward to this Thursday and Friday's meeting with the FDA advisors to get more information about what we know about boosters and breakthrough infections.
So on that, Dr. Boucher, before I go to the next call, when the FDA advisors meet, is there any word on whether they are, how do I ask this, with the Pfizer boosters, they were authorized for limited groups of people, and then that limited group grew over time. With Moderna and J&J, is this a blanket population that the FDA is considering, or are they going to begin by looking first at target groups? Do we know?
You know, I don't know. So I'm anxious to actually see the data that they review. But I will point out that the process is the FDA will review the data this week, and then there may be an authorization by the commissioner of the FDA, and then it will go to the CDC advisors, I think, in a couple of weeks, where they will make recommendations about who, if anybody, should receive those boosters.
And then any action would happen after that, correct?
Correct.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. 800-423-8255. We have Jillian on the line in Lexington. Jillian, go ahead and ask your question.
Yes, good afternoon. So I'm a special needs, a specialist as a speech pathologist, and obviously with kids that are somewhat compromised, that can't really comply with masks and they're worn incorrectly, and those kids are in very close proximity to us because we've been told that we're now down to, 3 feet. And there are some families that, for medical reasons or for religious reasons, have chosen to be exempt from, have their kids exempt from the vaccine. So my question is, at almost 64, with a little bit of immune compromise, am I safe in just a regular surgical mask, or is an N95, because some of these kids are in a 3 foot proximity range, recommended?
Jillian, are you vaccinated?
I am, and I had a booster as well.
Okay, thank you for that. Dr. Asumu.
Yeah, no, this is a great question. So number one, we want to use multiple layers. So I really love that Tiziana actually asked you, are you vaccinated? Because getting vaccinated is the best thing that you can do for yourself. And then the other layer is, wearing the mask, as you said. With the Delta variant, we've seen that wearing a better quality mask than like a cloth mask. So wearing either a surgical mask, and, you know, if you can tolerate it, those KN95 could be also be helpful. But I would say, you know, if you're in there with the kids, you want to wear a mask that you're going to tolerate. So I think a surgical mask, being vaccinated. And also the other thing to think about is ventilation. Like, what is the ventilation like in the space that you are? Is it possible for you to open the windows? Do you have a HEPA filter? So there's certainly a lot of things that we can do to sort of improve conditions and limit transmission in those cases.
1-800-423-8255 to ask your question. Lana is on the line in West Roxbury. Lana, go ahead with your question.
Hi. I'm 80 years old, and I've been vaccinated with the Pfizer. And my last vaccination date was 3/14/21. And I'm wondering whether for the booster shot, have too many months passed since my last vaccination for the booster to be, will I get help from the booster?
Great question, Lana. Dr. Boucher.
Yeah, so Lana, the good news is I think you're in very good shape to get your third dose now. So I would recommend that you go ahead and get it when you can.
Terrific. Let's grab another call here. We've got Nancy in Cape Cod. Nancy, go ahead.
Hi, yeah, quick question. Are the over-the-counter do-it-yourself test kits as reliable as if you, is it the same science, is it as reliable a result as if you were to go into a health facility?
If you went to like a lab and got it done or a MinuteClinic, something like that. Thank you, Nancy. Dr. Asumu, how about these rapid at-home tests? What is their level of reliability and how do they compare with, say, a PCR?
So first of all, you know, I'm really glad that we're talking a lot more about the home rapid tests, because having a test that you could get an answer really quickly and act on is going to be really important. The PCR tests that you get, let's say at a hospital facility or in a clinic or something, are more helpful in the sense that their sensitivity is best. But those home tests, like the antigen tests, are really good because they can tell us, they can answer the question, are you infectious right now? Which is a helpful thing to know. The good thing about them too is that, you know, you want to repeat those tests. And especially, you know, I have a 5-year-old who's in school, and it's been really helpful for me, you know, whenever she wakes up with the sniffles, to be able to get that test and know exactly what we need to do and get the confirmatory test later. But these tests are actually very helpful, and I'll encourage people to get as many as they can and get tested when they have symptoms.
Two clarifications there, Dr. Asumu. First, you said you want to repeat the tests. Just talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, no. So these tests, the home tests that the caller was talking about, are antigen tests as opposed to PCR tests, which check for like the genetic information. And so they're actually very helpful at answering the question, you know, are you infectious right now? But then, you know, the reason why you need to repeat them is to make sure that you're not infectious, let's say, like a day later or something. When you buy a kit for some of the, for instance, one of the tests that I know you can buy over the counter, it actually comes with two that you can actually do. And so it's actually recommended that you repeat that test within 36 hours. So I believe that those tests are actually going to be a very important tool for us to get to the new normal, to be able to have access to them.
And just very briefly, if you test positive at an at-home test, then you're suggesting one should go somewhere and get a full PCR, correct?
Well, it's sort of it depends. Like, is it, you know, different people have different, if you're positive on those tests, it's often going to be positive, but you want to go and get it checked and confirmed with the PCR. For instance, your job may want you to have a positive, like a confirmatory test. Like, for instance, some of the protocols that I've seen, you know, if you're positive, you're done. So it sort of depends. You want to check with what particular protocol you have.
Thank you.
Where you are.
So, Dr. Boucher, I don't have time to go back to the phone, but I do want to ask a question from Shauna in Walpole. She has a son who is 12 and has received his first dose of the Pfizer vaccine. He has a really bad cough, and so she wants to delay his second shot. Can she do that?
You know, she can, but she doesn't need to. So, you know, first and foremost, she should have her son tested for COVID to make sure he doesn't have COVID. And see the doctor if there's anything, you know, more going on. But as the studies were conducted, there were people who were having respiratory symptoms who were vaccinated perfectly safely.
And in two sentences, Dr. Boucher, what are you watching for over the next week or two? What's the most important thing on your mind right now?
Oh, I'm watching these numbers and hoping they continue to go down, looking at hospitalizations especially, but really overall case counts and deaths, as we've seen really nice decreases in our country and in our state over the last 2 weeks.
All right. Thank you. And listeners, many of you, we didn't get to your calls. I know you're still calling in. We will continue to do Ask the Doctor. So if we didn't get to your questions this week, follow us again next Tuesday. We've just had Dr. Helen Boucher, infectious disease physician at Tufts Medical Center, interim dean of the Tufts University School of Medicine. Dr. Boucher, thank you.
Thank you so much.
And Dr. Sabrina Asumu, assistant professor of medicine at Boston University School of Medicine and infectious disease specialist at Boston Medical Center. Dr. Asumu, thanks to you as well.
Thank you for having me on.